Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. This week, I am finally releasing my sleep special. So we're talking about how sleep affects anxiety, how anxiety affects sleep, and what we can do about it with sleep expert Tom Coleman. For this episode, Tom has kindly offered a pair of tickets to one lucky listener for his event called The Fear Workshop, where you will be empowered to take control of your fear. And it's happening in Dublin in January 2020. So I'll pop the link in the podcast description for more details. To win, simply share this podcast on social media using hashtag The Fear Workshop, and I will pick a winner very soon. Thank you so much to those of you who have subscribed to the podcast, and a special thank you to those of you who have signed up to support me on Patreon. It means so much to me, and it's your monthly donations that help to keep the podcast going. So if you've yet to sign up and you would like to, there's no pressure to, but if you would like to, you can add to the Owning a Tip Jar by going to www.patreon.com/Caroline Foran. Thank you so much, and I really hope that you get something out of this episode.
So I'm so thrilled to be joined now on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast by Tom Coleman, my sleep guru, really, is what I'm going to call you. I'm going to let you describe your role and what you do and how you came to be this sleep expert.
Right. Well, firstly, thanks for having me. And my interest in sleep began, I suppose, nearly 10 years ago. I was working with a lot of high-level athletes, and we started to look at what had the biggest impact, really, on recovery and performance. And I had worked a lot in nutrition, and obviously that played a key role. And I found that sleep was one of those things that had a huge impact, especially on things like decision-making and shot accuracy and those type of things that really impact teams. And you kind of see this towards the latter stages. You know, you see crucial decisions being made. So that's where my interest began.
So and sports then, first and foremost.
Sports first and foremost. And then I got to work with some of the Irish rugby guys. I went around and I gave talks and workshops to all the academies and senior players in Ulster, Munster, Leinster and Connacht. I think when Harvard call it one of the three pillars of health, we really have to take note when Harvard say that it has just as much of an impact on your health and well-being as what you eat. You know, it's so undervalued, I feel, or it's almost the first thing we get cut out of our life. So that's where my interest began. And then after doing the workshops with the guys, actually so much of what I done with the rugby guys ended up being the elephant in the room of I'm lying awake, I'm worried about, you know, my contract is coming up. I mean, like, all of this stuff, and you know, suddenly it went from a kind of sleep talk to teaching them tools and how to deal with that, because I mean, for me that's the elephant in the room is what do I do when I'm lying there and it's like a hamster on a wheel. Your brain is going, it won't let go of something, you know, and you're worried and you're stressed and you're anxious, and I mean, it's the worst time possible because you can't really write about it, can you, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Well, that's something I'm just all too familiar with, and people will know from listening to the podcast over the last two series now. When I suffered, when my anxiety was really, really horrific in 2014, when it all kind of came crashing down on me, one of the first things, the first obvious signs to me was how it affected my sleep. And I would pretty much confidently say I didn't sleep like a good night's sleep for about 4 months.
Yeah.
I couldn't get to sleep. In the middle of the night, I didn't even feel tired. I just lay there. I was probably permanently exhausted, but I just felt a bit wired. I would just lie there just thinking, you know, thinking about everything. And then in the morning, because I hadn't rested, I would feel obviously 10 times worse with the anxiety. And I felt like sleep, if you took away sleep on its own, you know, it's a form of torture in some in some parts of the world. That alone would be a major trigger of anxiety. But I already had so much else going on, and sleep was one of the elements that was making it so much worse. But also the anxiety was so bad that I couldn't sleep. So I was stuck in this catch-22.
Of course.
So for so long in this series, I've been meaning to sit down with you, and you're just such a busy man, it took till now, to really try and unpack the role of sleep in anxiety and how one affects the other. So I'm not sure what you think is like the best place to start, but I think maybe you said there people don't appreciate the value of sleep, and really what is the role of sleep?
So that's a really good question, and scientists are still struggling to answer this, believe it or not. I mean, we know so much more now about sleep than we did 20 or 30 years ago, and there's new data coming, you know, there's new research coming on board on a daily basis. So like, let's look at the role of sleep. I suppose we'd look at physical recovery and psychological recovery, really, because that's your body goes into a dormant state. But there's a hell of a lot happening. There's a lot happening in terms of what's going on in your brain and what's happening in your body. We all have a circadian rhythm, which is a 24-hour rhythm that we fall into. And the different organs and systems in the body do different things at those times. And sleep forms a huge part of that. And we are creatures who, you know, we are designed to get up in the morning and fall asleep, be awake during the day, hunt, gather, feed, do whatever else, and then at night, sleep. And I suppose if we break it down to looking at some of the different systems and how it affects those things. So if we first, I mentioned recovery first. So let's look at sort of tissue and cellular repair. It's called, I mean, they call it beauty sleep, right? For a very good reason. So much tissue repair happens at night. So new collagen for the skin is made at night. So, I mean, you know, it's nearly the first thing that people start talking about. Oh, I looked terrible. Pretty bad night, and you know your skin starts suffering, your eyes, your hair, all that kind of stuff. So cellular regeneration. So 75% of the growth hormone that is secreted, or there or thereabouts, is secreted during the deep phases of sleep. And it makes sense that when the body is in a dormant state, a lot of the repair can happen.
And then there's the psychological repair and strengthening and fortifying. That
so
happens.
That is critical. I mean, most of the physical stuff happens in the earlier stages, in the first few hours of sleep, 2 to 3 hours of sleep, shall we say. And then the psychological repair, a lot of that happens in the latter phases. So basically, I suppose, when we miss out on sleep, we're getting the physical repair, but we're not getting the psychological repair. And
so if we go to bed too late, we're missing the physical repair.
Yeah.
Or if we go to bed, get up too early, we're missing the psychological.
We won't miss the physical repair, I would say. Because if you go to bed too late and you fall asleep, your first two deep stages will look after the physical stuff. More likely is we'll miss out on the psychological repair. And that and we know this. I mean, if you've ever had a few hours sleep and you're up early, the next day you're walking around and you're just not functioning psychologically or emotionally at the same level. You know, the smallest thing can cause a crack, and you know, you can get worried, get stressed out, cry, do whatever.
On a good night's sleep for a healthy person, what can we expect to happen from a psychological standpoint?
So from a psychological standpoint,
or neurological,
your brain must clean itself up at night. So what some of the mechanisms of how sleep works is two main mechanisms. One of them is where we're exposed to light and we get a plaque buildup on the brain, an actual plaque buildup on the brain during the day. And it's amyloid plaque, beta amyloid. So what happens at night is your brain must clean itself. And it's like, I suppose, when we exercise, this metabolic buildup in the muscles and the bloodstream, and your lymphatic system cleans that up. Now, your lymphatic system does not extend to the brain. So the brain must clean itself up using the cerebral fluid that's present in our brain. So we have the cerebral fluid flushes the brain out and really helps get rid of that plaque. From a psychological point of view, memories are embedded. So if we look at memory building, that happens in different phases. So memories are embedded at night as well. And then I suppose our mood and all of those things are profoundly affected as well. So there's so much happening from a psychological standpoint and from a neurological standpoint that, you know, it really is crucial for normal functioning that we get that good quality sleep and those hours.
And what else does sleep do for the psychological well-being? Does it help us regulate emotions? What else? You know, it's such a significant tool, it's such a part, an essential part of the puzzle for your well-being, from how you think, the thought process you're going to have, how you react to things.
I think that's where you can really see it. I mean, you mentioned torture earlier on. Every army in the world, the first thing they do when they train recruits is they take away sleep, and that basically takes down the barriers and they put them under severe stress in a controlled environment. So then you start to see the cracks from a psychological point of view. You start to see the weaknesses in the person.
Wow.
You know, so that would be standard practice across all armies. Take away sleep and put stress on the person and watch what happens, see how they react to that.
Okay.
And that's very quickly, you will see the cracks from an emotional point of view.
So even if you've no other stress in your life, if you take away sleep, you're replacing it with stress, because it's a stressor on the body not to sleep.
Yes, sleep would be seen as a health protective activity.
Okay.
Which is incredible, really, when you think about it. I mean, you're taking away one of those pillars that we spoke about, and you're putting the body under a severe amount of stress by just doing that. You don't even need to be.
Need to be in a job you don't like.
Absolutely. And then I think that relationship that you spoke about. So, you know, if you are anxious, if you're stressed out, if you're worried, you're under pressure, and that gets going, then you're going to be activating that fight or flight, you know, and you're not going to be able to sleep.
And why is that?
Because you're activating your nervous system and your endocrine system, because I suppose we deal with threats in a different way now than, I suppose, when, you know, it's fight, flight or freeze.
Yeah.
That's what happens to us, right? So I know you know a lot of this, because what I really liked about listening to your podcast was that you went out and you were like, I'm going to find a solution to this.
Mm-hmm.
And you tried everything. And I love that, you see. And like, that's part of my story as well, is going out and finding, let's try everything here. So what happens is, when we get a threat of any kind, so we have this little part of our brain called the amygdala. It's like an almond, you know, there's an almond, sort of almond shape.
Like a bastard, so it is sometimes.
I know, yeah. Well, actually, some people have an enlarged amygdalas, so they might get a more profound response, which is interesting.
Wow.
You know, and we don't know this unless we scan the brain.
Okay. Which I'm actually doing next week.
Oh, that's so cool.
I'm getting a neurological map made of my brain with
amazing.
Brezzy for his podcast, so then I'll be able to report back to you and tell you
how
messed up I really am.
that's incredible. So yeah, the amygdala response, we have something called the amygdala response as well. I mean, this was hardwired into our, it's hardwired into us. So what that is about is, if you're walking, or you imagine cavemen and women, we're walking along and suddenly a tiger or a snake jumps out at us. We don't have time to send that information for processing to the prefrontal cortex and make a decision on it, okay, because it's instantaneous. So
the prefrontal cortex is a little bit lazy, doesn't really want to be disturbed unless it's absolutely necessary.
Absolutely. So the amygdala, it's short-circuited, and we just jump away. We just immediately move, so it's hardwired into us, which is
protective. Or we fight it, maybe.
Maybe you want to wrestle the tiger, yeah, no problem. Unfortunately, you can't do that at work with your boss, you know, you can't do that when you're faced with a stressful situation. So we have these threats, because that's what they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's really interesting to see that they threaten us at every level. Not just like, it would be so easy if it was all physical stuff, but it's not.
It's emotional threats to
our sense of emotional
security, our well-being, what people think of us. And those threats then produce chemicals in the body
that
have a knock-on effect on sleep.
Stress hormone, cortisol, like, you know.
Know it all too well.
Yes, and indeed, most of us, a lot of us do, we've got this kind of residual background stress and anxiety and stuff like that, and that's tough to deal with. So we get flooded with it, we get these chemical messengers. And we're not maybe aware of this, but actually our behaviours and the way we are, we're completely driven by them.
Mm-hmm.
We're completely, and we're trying to fight this with our thinking and our self-will, which is, you know, that's very, very difficult to do. So you get the adrenaline and you get the cortisol, and that draws the blood away from the digestive system. It takes emphasis away from immunity as well. So your immune system is kind of put into a subdued state if you're in this stressed out phase because it's not a priority. Okay, and that's where, you know, we start to break down because
get sick
and everything else. And I mean, like, if we look at the impact of anxiety, and then you write it down, and you look at a sheet which gives you the impact of poor sleep. I mean, they're virtually identical.
Mm.
You know, they're virtually identical, and one can cause the other. One can cause the other, so you can be.
That's why it's hard to know kind of how to get in there and which do you look at? Do you look at the, obviously you want to look at the anxiety and the sleep, but they both affect each other.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about, so we're talking about the cortisol, okay?
Yeah.
Which, from my understanding, we produce early in the morning. We produce it naturally to wake us up and kind of get us through the day.
Yeah.
And it dips off in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then melatonin starts to kind of creep up, and that's supposed to get us settled then, or it's almost like the call to action to go to sleep.
Yes.
And what I've understood with what was happening for me was that my cortisol levels weren't dropping off.
Yes.
They were staying really, really high.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't getting sleepy. I wasn't, and the melatonin didn't really have a chance to come up to where there was, it didn't have that handover of roles.
Yeah.
So for me then, that explained why I didn't feel sleepy. And then in the morning, because my cortisol was staying up there because of my situation, I was then getting that added boost again of cortisol in the morning to wake us up. But I already had enough cortisol in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then I got stuck in this horrible, horrible cycle.
Yeah.
And eventually, obviously, I had to address anxiety in all of the which ways that I've explored in the podcast. But one of the ways was to, and we'll get to solutions for sleep, but one of the ways was to try and intercept that in balance between the melatonin and the cortisol, and trying to basically give myself a little bit more melatonin with the doctor prescription to help sort of hack my sleep. So am I right in saying that that's kind of what's going on hormonally?
I mean, let's look at it from a chemical perspective, because it's driven by that. So sleep is driven by the sunrise. Light enters the eye. We've got very specific photoreceptors in our eyes. Even people, depending on the damage, but even people who are blind, their circadian rhythm will be dictated still by the light going into their pupils, right? So what happens is that sends a signal to the SCN, the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain, which is a very specific region of the brain, which that's the master switch, that's the timekeeper, and that's what drives the endocrine system to carry out the function over the 24 hours.
So, and the endocrine system is where our hormones come
from. So all your hormones, right?
Right.
So now they've multiple roles, right? So the SCN goes, right, it's time to get up. So we've a spike in cortisol. But prior to that, if you're asleep at, say, 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning is when your blood pressure spikes to get you ready to get up. Your body temperature starts to increase. You're still asleep. Right, and your body temperature starts to increase to get the muscles ready for action. So, all of your systems are kind of set up like this. So, you get a spike in cortisol, which is it's very useful, right, at certain times if it's appropriate. And it's all about balance with all of these things. So, serotonin and cortisol, we get a spike in these, and then we get up, we start moving around. These are like stress neurotransmitters to get the systems up and moving. The day goes on, we get lots of serotonin, hopefully, bright light signals early in the day. And then later in the day, cortisol levels start to fall off.
Or they should.
They should if we're not, like, you know, very stressed out.
If you're listening to this podcast, they're probably not dropping off for you.
But we give you ways in which you can help your body to do that, right? And then the serotonin that we've produced, once it starts to get dark, that serotonin, it's turned into melatonin. So serotonin is a precursor to melatonin, right? And your brain turns it into melatonin. And then what happens is melatonin levels start to build and build and build and build. And then that is one of the major mechanisms that pushes you into sleep. Now, the melatonin is not going to work if you're full of adrenaline and cortisol. Indeed, you know, the rugby players would have strategies for dealing with this after training, post-exercise, and athletes do. And those are some of the things that, like, I can easily share with the listeners. So that's what happens from a chemical perspective. And hopefully then you should have undisturbed sleep. But if you have elevated cortisol levels for a long time, then obviously you're not going to sleep. Dopamine has another sort of key role. Even things like progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, all of those, like, testosterone peaks in the morning. We start to produce, women produce testosterone, men produce 10 times more, obviously. Your testosterone levels are at the highest in the morning. It's part of what's waking you up, so it slowly starts getting secreted in the while you sleep. Menopausal women have difficulty with sleep. They get hot flushes and night sweats and stuff because of their progesterone levels, because they start to dip and fall away, and that causes sleep disturbances. So all of those chemical messengers are crucial to have in balance.
And what is the... I mean, people take for granted the effect that even a minor sleep disturbance can have on them.
Yeah.
But what's happening in your brain if you're disturbing your sleep or if you're not getting to sleep in terms of those chemicals?
In terms of, well, it might be what I can tell you. I mean, you're disrupting the whole system, really, if you're not getting the quality sleep, because it turns into that vicious cycle. It's like the negative coffee cycle, right? So you don't sleep. So the next day you get up and you're like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I didn't sleep. I need a coffee to get me through the day. And then that coffee, you have so many coffees to keep you going that coffee blocks the adenosine receptors in your brain.
And adenosine is the sleep pressure.
It's the sleep
that builds up over the day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it blocks the adenosine receptors. It's actually the same physical shape, caffeine, and it blocks the receptor. So you don't get that second mechanism.
And it blocks it, but it doesn't get rid of it, so that when the caffeine wears off, all that adenosine is still there and you crash.
Yeah, you crash. And sometimes with people, they can achieve sleep onset because we have what's called sleep pressure. Okay, so again, it's like the adenosine. It's this pressure that builds up during... The longer we're awake, the higher the pressure. So we have the sleep pressure, we have the adenosine, we have the melatonin, and all those things come together and push us into sleep. And it's a really complex process. I mean, if I showed you the biological map of turning serotonin into melatonin, like it's a huge chemical trail that's... I struggled to get my head around it. It's very complex. So you can't reproduce that with sleeping tablets or with chemicals. It's a very blunt instrument. It was described recently as a very blunt instrument in dealing with that.
It's very complicated, but it's very easy to mess up.
Yeah.
And what I know, there's a lot of factors that can mess up sleep. I want to focus on the psychological factors that can mess it up. Can you talk me through those?
The two or three key things that I've come across, because I've been in the, I suppose, doing a lot of talks in the corporate world for the last number of years, and I probably speak to hundreds of people every week on sleep, and so I get the questions and I get the issues, and I suppose the big ones that come up are anticipatory anxiety and just, you know, stress and worry. So let's look at anticipatory anxiety. We do it to ourselves. So what happens is we're very busy. All of us are very busy. And then we often jump into bed and go, God, I have to go to bed. I have to get off my sleep. It's another... And that can be another pressure even sometimes for us. You know, I have to get my sleep. I have to get my steps. I have to get this, you know. So anyway, we jump into bed. We don't have a proper wind down. And that's, from a psychological, emotional point of view, that's crucial, right? So we jump into bed and we go, oh God, time to sleep. But then your brain goes, you forgot to take out the bins. Oh my God, did you email her? Oh, and you start doing a list of things that you forgot to do today.
And just in terms of that worry at night, which is something I've experienced a lot, just in terms of what the brain looks like, when it's middle of the night and we're waking up with anxiety or we're having anxiety as we're going to sleep, is our ability to rationalise compromised because our prefrontal cortex is kind of switched off?
Yeah, prefrontal cortex switches off. So a lot of the systems switch off.
So you're left with your amygdala really ruling the roost.
You're left with your amygdala and your hypothalamus and those areas, and basically they're in charge of emotion and memory and stuff like that, and future. Like, memory is very... your experience and your memory is very much associated with how you see things in the future.
Okay.
So those areas of your brain are stimulated and active. The logical areas of your brain are shut down to a large degree.
Which is why it's so hard to rationalise. Which is also why it's so pointless trying to argue with yourself, because it's not going to be until the morning that you'll be able to sort of see clearly.
That thing of the cold light of day, let's see it in the cold light of day. Sleep on it. All those things have...
If you can.
if you're not awake thinking about it, you know. Hugely. But the anticipatory anxiety is, I have a very busy day tomorrow. Oh my God, it's so important I get this right. It's so important I do this. And when you start activating areas of memory and emotion, you start to activate... You can activate the sympathetic nervous system, which means your cardiovascular system, your nervous system, your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, your body releases sugars into the bloodstream, and your brain is looking for danger. So that's what's kind of happening if you start activating those areas. And that is not conducive at all to sleep. It's the opposite. So we want to activate the parasympathetic system, which is the rest and recover mode.
So if people are having sleep issues a lot of the time, would you say that if it's psychologically induced, their sympathetic nervous system is on overdrive?
Yeah, I would say that. Like you'd see that manifest in people who train late, maybe.
Okay.
So that's fight. You're in fight or flight. People can't sleep. They might not have the psychological baggage that goes with that. But looking at the psychological baggage, that is the stressors. That is the threat. And I mean, one of the tools that I taught to the rugby players was I taught them a tool on how to deal with that. And that's what I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but in my workshops that are coming up, I'm going to teach people. I'm going to give people different tools to deal with that.
You're going to give a few of them here, aren't you?
I am, certainly. I suppose the big one for me is when the brain takes off. So we have the anticipatory stuff, which is one thing, but then you really have that anxiety that you start sorting through your life, maybe. You start looking at yourself, or maybe it's your current situation. You know, because if we look at stress, we have episodic stress, we have systemic stress, we have chronic stress, we have different types of... it's the same, I mean, like... When I was growing up, we didn't have all these words for it.
Yeah, but you still experienced them, didn't really know.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I've been through so much stress and anxiety in my life in early days and stuff like that, but we didn't have the vocabulary to deal with it. And I love it now. I mean, it's much more open now, like you say, you know, it's fantastic. So I suppose the ones that I've looked at and have a lot of experience in showing people and dealing people is that one where it can be something specific, but they're bigger issues and you know, as I say, when everything quietens down during the day, because I think often if we talk about them, like, you know, if we talk about our fears and anxieties to other people, it dissipates maybe.
Yeah.
That's maybe enough that you say, look, I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling actually, and we learn the language, you know, to express them, and often that can really help. And also I find social contact with people, because thought processes can be going on in your head that make perfect sense in your head, and then you sit down and you say to someone and go, oh my God, that doesn't sound, you know.
Or you're even just taking it out of yourself. Like something that I really like to do if I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed or worried before I go to bed is not try and bury it or pretend like I don't feel it, because I know at 2 a.m. I'm going to be wide awake thinking, oh, Jesus. But to almost allow myself to indulge in my worries and get them out of myself and maybe onto paper or
100%.
Onto the poor, unfortunate ear of my husband.
Yeah.
And then I sort of say, okay, well, I've parked that.
Yeah.
So I know I'm not ignoring it, but I can pick it up again in the morning.
Absolutely. I think that's you're in a place of it where you're lying in bed. You can't actually do anything about your problem, really.
Yeah.
You know. And I always say to people, you can't think your way out of it. A guy said to me many, many years ago, he said, you cannot think your way into better living. You have to live your way into better thinking. So if you're taking the right actions, you know, in your life, only you can say that.
I love that. Live your way to better thinking.
Yeah, live your way into better thinking. Because I think we know that if we're doing what we should be doing.
That should be the title of your book.
If we're doing what we should be doing, everything's great, right? But if we're not, and that thing of, I should be doing this, I should be better on this, I should be, and that kind of starts building up and eating away at you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you said, avoidance. When you go, oh, I'm not going to think about that, or I'm not going to, that is not going to help. So, you know, so again, a friend of mine, he said, you can pray until you're blue in the face, but it's not going to change until you take action. Different action, different results. And that's what it's about. So when you're in bed worrying about it, you can't really take action. But the thing that I teach people is to, first of all, recognise when their head goes. Recognise the thinking. Recognise the anxiety. Isn't that it, really? Because that's what it's about. And then start to look at it. So I give them sort of columns to write in, and I give them a process. Because with athletes, and the other things that I share are things that athletes do, and you know, I mean, you were talking to Ian Madigan. Athletes do the right things, but they have systems set up. So they have, and this is what we look at business, it's the same. You know, you have actions like healthy eating, healthy cooking, exercise twice a week, go to the gym. That forms part of a bigger system. And it's like, it's there's a name for it, I think it's like the onion. I can't remember the actual name. And then the inner core is the person that you want to be, the best version of yourself. And you can ask yourself that question, you know, what would what would a really, you know, happy, healthy, well-balanced Tom or Caroline do in this situation? Mm. Well, they would do this, right? So if you do all the things and they form part of a system, you are going to get to that place. And you are going to get to that place of self-confidence, of being able to deal with anything, really, you know.
And sleep is one of those things, but something we take for granted.
Sleep is one of those things that is going to completely skew, you know, if you take it away, you're taking away a huge buffer to the outside world, you know, both internally and externally.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know.
Sleep can be compromised when we have anxiety, but is it true that we can be experiencing anxiety because of bad sleep?
Yeah, so people suffer from, there actually is a name on it, but people worry about not getting enough sleep, mm-hmm. so much that it stops them falling asleep.
Okay.
and I always say, you know, we can put ourselves under this pressure, and I'll give you a good example. If you finish work, you come home, you sit down, you turn on the TV and you're sitting there, you're relaxing, you're watching your favourite programme and you just start falling off to sleep. You start not, the barriers are down, you're relaxed, you're at home. There's no pressure on you to do anything, only relax. And, you know, you're fighting to stay awake. And then you go up to bed and you're in bed and you're like,
I feel like, did you have a camera in my house and see me doing this? Yeah, then you're like, now I have to sleep now.
Yeah, now I have to sleep because I've got this thing on. And that's the anticipatory stuff, anticipation, anxiety, creeping. That's you putting yourself under pressure to sleep.
Okay.
And that's you know, it's, see how it changes. You're suddenly you're wide awake, you know. So I suppose the idea is, again, to have a strategy. I'm a great believer in having a strategy.
Okay.
Because we can have all types of issues. What's the solution? What's your strategy going to be? And I suppose that's what I give people, different simple little strategies that they practice, that they learn, I suppose, outside of sleep, and then they can use these simple tools. And they're not something that I've created. They're validated tools that have been used by the likes of the US military and teaching all their new recruits how to sleep.
So can we maybe take me as an example, and let's just assume that I was in a very anxious phase, I have a lot going on, I'm back to that place of a lot of cortisol, and obviously one of the first things that's going to be affected is my sleep. What kind of strategy are you going to advise for me?
Okay, so what we'd look at, I mean, the thing that people have to understand as well is this: what you do when you get up in the morning can have just as much of an impact on your sleep that night as what you do an hour before you go to bed.
Really?
Yeah. So you would look at, you know, we tend to think about sleep or sleep hygiene or good sleep as kind of, well, 10 minutes before I go to bed or an hour before I go to bed. But actually getting up in the morning and, say, getting exposure to bright light, that sends a very strong and definite signal to that SCN that I spoke about in the brain, and that's your time set, that's your master clock. So if you send a very strong signal, and also sends a very strong signal for cortisol and serotonin and all the neurotransmitters, and in so doing your body understands very clear signals here, get up and move around and get into action, and that will really facilitate then the production of melatonin later that night. So we want to try and avoid too many stimulants or sedatives, like alcohol, coffee, you know, sure, coffee's fine. So, caffeine has a half-life of about anywhere between 5 and 8 hours, depending on your physiology.
So if you have a cup of coffee at like 7 p.m., it won't even be half gone out of your system by like 3 in the morning or something?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the examples you can use is maybe if you have 4 cups of coffee. I think if you have 4 cups of coffee, it would be like, if you have 4 cups of coffee early in the day, it would be like having one an hour before you go to bed. Mm. You know, so that's not what you want to do to your, because again, the adenosine, and maybe it doesn't stop the onset of sleep, but maybe it disrupts the quality. It will stop you going very deep into the restorative phases and cause more wake episodes than normal. So just because it doesn't affect onset. So yeah, those are the type of things. So the stimulants and the sedatives, and then your routine, your ritual. What's your ritual? Tony Robbins says, you know, he talks about the ritual every day, and what's your ritual for that? And we have great rituals for kids, but we should have a ritual for ourselves. I'm a huge fan of having a notepad and pen by the bed as well. Just to get rid of, like, you, and you said it there, like, if you've got stresses or worries, you had a tough day and a rough day, and we've all had those days, is to write it down, get it out of your mind, and draw a line under it. And like physically writing it out will really help. And then putting that notepad in the drawer and going, right, I'm locking that away for the day. You can cognitively do that exercise as well. Mm-hmm. So what I mean is you can lie in bed and visualize a notepad and pen and write down the things that are stressing you out or you're worried about. And then you put them into a big, massive suitcase. You lock the suitcase and you put the suitcase away and you say, this is not in my control. I've done everything I can and I'll deal with it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And it's also really important as well, what we were talking about earlier, not just to do those things, but to know that the parts of your brain that are engaged at that time of night. So it's not your fault that you're worrying.
Yeah,
and I think for me, with everything I talk about with anxiety, if you can understand what's happening, why it's happening, that helps hugely.
Hugely.
Even if you haven't quite gotten to a solution, you haven't gotten rid of it yet. If I can say, well, like, if I'm lying in bed saying, well, I know my prefrontal cortex is having a snooze right now, and I know my amygdala is a little bit worried because, you know, that's the only part that's been left on or whatever. Just that knowledge for me is kind of empowering.
Absolutely. I think, and then I've heard this before in various therapies, sick, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Halt, that it was hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you're sick, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, it's going to have twice or three times the impact on you emotionally, everything, you know. So be aware that you're in that state. Okay. You know, I think it's having that, it's feeding that voice. It's I always talk about the inner monologue. What's the dialogue to yourself? You know, and there is a very healthy, well-balanced, confident, amazing, beautiful person there in all of us. And we need to nourish that with the right words and thoughts. And as, you know, the actions and the day fades away, a lot of this stuff comes up. So we need to nourish that with the right thought and say, look, it's been a tough day. Okay. And as you said, acknowledge the fact that your thinking brain is tired and it needs a rest, okay?
And don't even try and argue with it.
Don't
right
even try
now.
And say, okay. Oh, it's like a child. Mm-hmm. Like a child that comes to you and goes, oh, I'm terrible. Oh, I've had a really bad day. I fell and this happened. And he said this to me. And you go, it's okay. It's okay. Be fine in the morning, you know. And acknowledge it, write it down, park it up, and even come up with a 3-point action plan for the next day. Say, right, well, I'm going to do that and that and that. Sometimes, not all that, but sometimes, the reason we're actually worried about this stuff is because we're not doing what we should be doing. Because why? We're worried about the consequences. And we're never responsible for the consequences. We're only responsible for our actions. Because we can never guess what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We attach so much meaning to, well, if I say this or do this, that's going to happen. You know, and the world isn't, life isn't like that. And that's what so often keeps us awake. And that's why we're on that loop.
Focusing on what we can't control.
On what we can't control.
Talk to me as well about the physical effect, or the physical, what's the word I'm looking for? Physical things that impact sleep. So screen time, tech.
There's
a lot of talk about
exercise,
that.
Exercise.
People ignore it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think...
I am trying really hard, but I will I'm giving out to my husband every night for it, but he'll take out his book and then he'll take out his phone. He's like, I just need a couple of minutes just to, like, it's like he thinks of it as therapeutic. I'm like, it's the single worst thing you're doing by being on the screen. So what is your thoughts on tech in bed and sleep?
Tech in bed. I mean, like, honestly, every single crowd I speak to, I ask who brings their phone into the bedroom, and I get probably somewhere in the region of about a 96% hands up, you know. Most of us do now, so...
Is that just so stupid?
I mean, it is in one sense. I mean, the blue LED light is twice as powerful as natural sunlight at suppressing melatonin. So you're essentially telling your brain to wake up, and you're literally shutting down melatonin.
Okay.
And I'm not even talking about doing the whole Instagram comparison thing or...
Yeah. The impact of your brain,
just
the hormones.
Physically, you're shutting down the major sleep neurotransmitter.
And that's enough of a reason not to do it.
And that alone is enough of a reason. Now, what you can do is you can go to brightness and display settings and cut that out. Blue light is also highly addictive.
Mm.
I've met researchers who've carried out studies on blue light, and they said it's especially addictive for children. It's very worrying with children with blue light. So shut it out on your phone. Better off not to have your phone. If you are going to bring your phone, let's use it in a positive way. Do not disturb. No blue light, and maybe a meditation app.
Okay.
So,
what about having a bath before bed or a shower?
Wonderful. So another key trigger for sleep is temperature, body temperature, core body temperature. So what we need to do is expel or get rid of our body temperature. So having a hot shower, it actually draws all the blood to your extremities to cool, and it actually that helps lower your core body temperature. So key trigger, your bedroom should be cold. It's a great idea to have a shower an hour before, half an hour before you go to bed. Ditch the electric blanket. It'll be warm enough between the sheets. People are worried about, like, how, you know, when I say, like, I think 16 to 18, that's quite cool for a bedroom.
Mm.
But essentially what happens from a physiological point of view is melatonin production doubles with low temperature.
Okay.
So if you imagine cavemen and women, we hunted, we gathered, we got some food, we sat around the fire died down, got really cold. And then that was a key trigger for sleep. So
I find it very hard to actually shut off completely if my extremities are cold. Like I have to actually sometimes hold my hand around my nose and get out of the bed and put on socks. And once my
but that's good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So put on the socks and gloves even, because that will help.
Okay.
That will actually help get rid of. That will actually help with your regulate your core body temperature as well. Believe it or not.
But you want like a nice. You want a nice cool body.
You want a cool bedroom.
Okay.
And your body will look after the rest.
Okay.
Because you will never sleep in it if it's too hot. I mean, if it's too cold, you can really cuddle under the, you can throw another blanket on, or you can cuddle up to someone or whatever you may do, right, to get warm, but you will. You will, and your body will kind of regulate that. So body temperature, the stimulants, the sedatives, the ritual, the tech, get rid of the tech, or certainly maybe not get rid of it, use it in a better way. Using it, because I don't think it's doable for many of us, you know. So all of those things play a key role.
And what about sugar before bed? Or?
People, certain foods will help bring on sleep. So a lot of foods with an amino acid called tryptophan will help. Tryptophan again is a precursor to serotonin and melatonin. So you know, any whole proteins, dairy, cereals. So you know, like a bowl of cereal, a banana, stuff like that. The whole sugar thing is it won't, I mean, it depends on what you've been doing earlier.
Okay.
I mean, you're looking at basically energy in, energy out. So if there's an energy deficit,
right,
you know, it's fine. I wouldn't worry too
much. And for improving your sleep, are you better off exercising early in the day or later in the day?
Probably earlier. If you're going to exercise late, I mean, like, okay, from a physiological standpoint, if we look at all the different attributes like circulation, blood pressure, testosterone, all the different things that might drive performance, probably our best time to exercise would be 5 or 6. But then, you know, that might push your bedtime back a little. The way to counteract that would be to have a hot shower, cold shower. So you're vasoconstricting, you're getting rid of the metabolic buildup. Okay.
Okay,
you're bringing blood flow with a hot shower, and then you're flushing it out with a cold shower. So that helps one of the physiological things. The other thing to do is food. So 3-to-1 carbohydrate to protein. watch the quantity. And what that does is that activates the parasympathetic nervous system. And then the
carbs. Of course, carbs, they do.
Absolutely. Carbs are great.
They're so sympathetic. I love them.
There have been so many studies, believe it or not, on carbohydrates and mood and stuff like that. There are studies out there, you know.
Okay. So eat your carbs for good night's sleep.
let's be clear about the quality of carb, right? So, I mean, like Skittles are carbs.
Okay, well, yeah. Let's say the good ones then.
The good ones, we need the good carb. We need the complex carbs. So things like, oats or cereals are fairly good.
But for the most part, exercise a little bit earlier in the day so that you're not having a stimulant on your body
hugely
late at night.
Absolutely. And then the final part is the deep breathing, and this ties into the meditation. And scientifically how that works is you stimulate the vagus nerve.
So the vagus, which is
a nerve that runs from the brain, and it's part of your parasympathetic nervous system, and it runs all the way down through your body through the different systems and digestive system. So part of when you eat food and you eat the carbs and you eat the protein, that signals to the vagus nerve, and that signals to the parasympathetic, time to rest and digest, rest and recover.
Okay.
So that's what you're doing. You're kind of doing a biohack.
Yeah.
So instead of like waking up and checking the phone or doing, I'm awake. That's a natural part of your sleep as well. Waking up is a natural part of your sleep.
I wanted to ask you then, for people, if they're extra nerdy like me, obviously the goal is just to get asleep and stay asleep. But what are those phases of sleep?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, like you said, there, it's not abnormal to wake up.
Yeah, absolutely. We call it sleep-wake cycles. So we sleep in 90-minute cycles. Generally, we try and get 5 cycles a night. So 5 90 minutes equals 7.5 hours. That's why the recommendation is so. And those modulate. And what I mean by that is, let's take one of those cycles. So when you fall asleep in stages. The adenosine and the melatonin and all those things build up and you tip into sleep. And your first 15 minutes is stage one sleep, which is light. Brainwave activity changes. Your core body temperature starts to drop and your heart rate starts to drop as you fall deeper into sleep, and that's stage two. In stage two, your core body temperature should have dropped by about 2 degrees. That causes a rise in melatonin production. And that causes you to fall deeper again into sleep. So you go into stage three, stage four sleep. Your brainwave activity is changing throughout to reflect that. And then stage four is the deepest aspect. And then you dream in stage five. And your first dream phase could be 5, 10, 15 minutes. Okay, that's a light phase of sleep. That's the only REM. Critical for health. Now, whether you remember it or not, you do dream. Okay. And that full process of those 5 stages is 90 minutes. And then you go back, so you finish your dream state and you start falling again deeper into sleep. The first two phases are the deepest, okay? Sorry, the first two cycles are the deepest. And then what happens is, as we progress through the night, each dream phase gets longer. So if you think about it, you're getting lighter and lighter sleep as the night progresses.
Okay.
And you start to slowly wake up more and more and more. So that's what happens over the course of the night. And everything from immune, like a lot of your immune cells are made at night, your endocrine system balances, the repair is happening, the psychological repair is happening. The structure of your brain changes depending on the quality and quantity of your sleep. And again, like you said, you start taking away that stuff. And I'll give you an example. You know, for men, testosterone level. So if I miss out, if I get less than 5 hours, say, my testosterone level is that of a man who's 10 years older than me.
Mm.
Huge impact. Immune cells. There's a 70% reduction in natural killer cells with less than 5 hours sleep.
Wow.
So it's pretty immediate. The impacts are pretty immediate. And as I said, the structure of your brain and all of the stuff that we're still finding out about and trying to measure, like, you know, the ability to deal with different stressors from an emotional or psychological point of view as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. There's so much to know about sleep. If someone has no problem falling asleep, but then their anxiety, for whatever reason, wakes them up. I know it's natural to wake up, but we can't get back asleep.
Yeah.
Why is that happening and what can we do?
Look, we're exceptionally sensitive as humans. We're exceptionally sensitive to everything. And that can really happen with people. If they've got issues going on in their life or stuff going on in their life, they're going to be woken up typically after the first two deep phases. After 3 hours, they'll tend to wake up. Very typical. Okay. First thing to realise is that's okay. That's normal. But if they've got stressors going on or particularly anxious, then I suppose they need to have a strategy ready or do something. And that's the big one for me, is I kind of teach them how to deal with that.
And something people ask me a lot is if they wake up in the middle of the night, should they get out of bed and go downstairs and turn on the telly, or should they? Because, you know, then you start putting yourself under pressure to be like, oh my God, you need to get up in a few hours. And
yeah, I mean, like that, it's so much about perspective, isn't it? Because some people, I've met people who go, oh, that's great, I have another 2 hours in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can look at that and go, oh my God, I've only 2 hours left, I have to get up then. So it does depend on your... I suppose it's why you're awake. If you're awake and you're really anxious and stressed out, going downstairs or walking around or reading a book, not going to deal with it, in my mind, in my experience. And so what I do then is I do the cognitive exercise that I teach people.
So you actually just address the concerns that are keeping you awake?
Address it, yeah. Write it down, get it on paper, get some context, get some perspective on it, and come up with an action plan and see what you can do the next day.
So that's, I guess, if people are anxious for other reasons and it's impacting their sleep. But what do you say to people who are anxious about sleep and worried that, oh my God, like I'm not getting enough sleep or I'm not able to fall asleep. I know that's going to have such a massive impact on me because of what we're learning about sleep now. How can they relax about sleep?
It's like, very good, yeah. It's kind of oxymoronic that people are so stressed out and measuring everything, and that's what's keeping them awake. And I've met people who are like that, who say, like, I wake up in the middle of the night and check to see how much sleep I've got, you know.
And
I know, it's like another performance thing.
Would you recommend using those apps that help track your sleep, or do you think it's making us more paranoid?
It will depend on the person, because some people it's actually a negative, whereas other people it may be a good thing. So what I would say to those people is, if you are relaxed, if you view it as not, you know, I have to sleep here, I have to put myself, you know, you're putting yourself under pressure. And I sometimes say to people, try and stay awake as opposed to try and fall asleep. And it just changes everything around in your head. You go, okay, I'll try and stay awake instead of trying to fall asleep and see how long I get. You know?
Reverse psychology.
It kind of is, really. And it's mad how well it works. It takes the pressure off you having to fall asleep anyway, for starters. So what I'd say to those people are, view it all as something positive, that you're okay. If I'm not going to fall asleep, that's fine. I'm relaxed. You're still resting. If we look at something like meditation, and we compare brainwave activity to someone who's meditating and awake to someone who's in stage one sleep, it's the same.
Wow.
So that's why, I mean, meditation is one of those wonderful tools that we should be using a lot more of. And it's something, there's a book called Altered Traits. It's by Daniel Goleman, who wrote Emotional Intelligence, and he's a Harvard researcher. So himself and another Harvard researcher wrote a book on meditation. They have probably 40 or 50 years experience each in meditation, because they're huge fans since the 70s. And it has, you know, exceptional benefits. And it's the untrained mind that keeps us awake. And meditation is a tool that we can use to help train the mind. So I love the title of the book, because they talk about traits and states. And this is crucial for people with anxiety. If we're anxious, if we're full of fear, we're in a state. That's our emotional state, and our emotional state is not a good indicator. Our thoughts when we are in an emotional state are not good indicators of our health, our well-being, our life, where it's going, or anything else. So that's a huge thing to say to people, I feel, you know. Your thoughts and your emotions can't be relied upon at 2 o'clock in the morning when you wake up.
No, okay? Absolutely not. Ever. So, don't trust them. They're lying to you.
Don't trust them. They're a liability. Absolutely. Because that's when you're going to get like these grenades thrown in, the worst case scenario in your life, and you're going to lose everything. You start attaching all these meanings onto these things. So again, I mean, you know, when you start to realize that, it goes, okay. So realize it's only a state. And so something like meditation or a body scan exercise, where you're taking your mind and you're giving it an exercise enough to engage it, and almost distract.
I find that massively helpful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you think is really important to mention, or that people should be aware of in trying to improve their sleep for their anxiety, or improve their anxiety for their sleep?
I suppose I'm a huge fan of kind of looking at the full picture. Looking at, because when I say to people with sleep issues, say like, why are you having sleep issues? Is it the psychological, emotional stuff? Is it the physical stuff? So let's look at the very briefly, controlling what we can control. Because this is what the athletes do, right? They have a system and they control everything they can. So light, you control. Strong light signals early in the day. No light signals, electronics very low later in the day. Caffeine, you know, a certain amount of caffeine, watch the caffeine. Food, 2 hours before, you know, try and not to have any food or lessen the activity of the digestive system. Routine, very critically, you have set a good routine. Make your bedroom a haven for sleep, not an entertainment area. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the habit, the heat, temperature, keep the temperature at the right level. And then even something like body positioning and no clutter in your room. Like, imagine a perfect sleep haven and you create that. So you're controlling all those physical attributes. And then from an anxiety or psychological point of view, you know, I suppose, again, I mentioned the untrained mind. And I mean, we must try and not let the hamster get in the wheel and our emotions and our thought processes at 3 o'clock in the morning to overwhelm us, because that's what they often do.
And instead of trying to stop it, just say, there you go, running on your treadmill, away would you go. I'm not going to pay you too much attention. I know that the adult is going to take back over in the morning. So just kind of accept it and understand why it's happening, because of what's the parts of your brain that are engaged.
Yeah.
And don't feed into it too much.
Don't feed into it. The worst thing you can do is buy into it. I mean, like, my father used to say to me, I'm not worried about the problem you have, I'm worried about the solution you're going to apply. So the solution you apply is you do your 10 or 15 minute cognitive exercise of writing it down or doing whatever you have to do, and then you know, park it up. If you feel like getting up, get up. If you feel like, you know, reading a book or whatever, distracting the mind, doing a meditation, listening to a podcast. I mean, you know, that's what I do. I mean, I listen to podcasts or...
You say my podcast puts you asleep.
No, darling, no, not yours.
I hope it does. I hope it does make people feel relaxed enough to fall asleep.
Yeah, the last thing to hear at night is Caroline's voice. Fantastic. I listen to a football podcast or a documentary or something like that, and that completely just, you know, it's enough to engage my mind without being super stimulating or anything.
Yes, distraction and stimulated.
Yeah, so it's all... And the other thing I'm going to tell people is that... Do the things during the day that you have to do. Deal with some of the stuff. If something's keeping you awake at night because you're not doing something, no matter how much you avoid it, no matter what, you know. And unfortunately, the thing with fear is that you do the thing that makes you afraid and you get the courage after.
Mm, yeah.
Which is just so not fair, isn't it?
It's not fair. And I'm always saying the quote of the only way around fear is right through it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, courage is the more, it's not about having no fear, but it's about having courage and being brave.
Well, that's it. Well, and the difference between bravado, bravery and courage is, the bravado is when you show up in the battlefield, right? But the courage is when you actually do the thing.
Mm.
So like for anyone out there, I mean, like I've gone through so many different things in fear and anxiety in my own life. And like, trust me, like I can tell you, the rewards are huge if you can go through that. And the only way to go through it is actually do the thing that, you know, do the right thing, do the appropriate thing for you. But you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then you'll get the tremendous burst of courage after. Mm. You know, it's such an exhilarating experience, but we quickly forget it.
Yeah.
Don't we? Now, and then just the final thing I'd like to say on that, the black hole of worry, of fear, of all that kind of stuff. It's like a spiral downward. And when we're in that place, it feels real. It's so real. It's incredibly real. It's crippling people.
Mm.
And then when we're in the good place, we do the thing. Isn't life fantastic? And you feel empowered. And you feel, no, this is reality. You know? But I suppose to realise that both of them can be our reality.
And the main takeaway for me is just to respect and appreciate the power of sleep, and definitely move away from any kind of mentality that used to see surviving on a 4-hour night as a kind of badge of honour or anything. It's so crucial. It's one of the pillars, like you say, for well-being, and
absolutely,
one that we should not be taking for granted. Tom Coleman, thank you so much. Let people know about your events and when they're coming up and where they can get tickets. And I believe we're going to do a giveaway,
aren't we, for some of our listeners? We're going to do a giveaway. So I've got a workshop coming up. The first workshop is on Saturday the 21st of January.
Brilliant.
So I've called it quite appropriately the Fear Workshop.
Great. It does what it says in the tin
because I've been around to so many different events and talks and things like that, and you know what? It's the elephant in the room.
Mm.
I give people a tool that will transform their life ultimately. Several tools, lots of tools, and I deal with the emotional, the cognitive, the physical, from the exercise, the food, all aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and give people an array of different tools to tackle the issue of anxiety and fear in their life.
Okay.
So the first one is on the 25th and the next one is on the 1st. So I am giving Caroline a couple of tickets to for the listeners to come along. And tomcoleman.ie is my new website, and I'm just the contact details will be there.
Okay.
And also Eventbrite, the fear workshop.
Okay, and I'll put the event details in the podcast description as well.
Super.
And to win, you have to sleep 8 hours a night every night until then.
We want to see you. We're sending your tracking. Yeah, so Caroline can decide.
Tom, thank you so much. There's so much there to take away about sleep, and I can't wait to go home and put my PJs on.
Super. Thank you very much for having me, Caroline.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.